This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not replace your own financial, tax, legal, or financial product advice.
All right, welcome to My Millennial Money. John Pigeon here. I'm in the driver's seat. I feel a little bit like Craig Lowndes, and I've got Mark Scaife with me today.
Howdy.
James Millard. How are we, James?
Mate, I'm well. Thanks, John.
So we're talking today about overcoming fear and taking action. It's a bonus episode, but I reckon it is going to be a beauty because speaking off air, we've got some little nuggets of gold that we're going to deliver, haven't we?
Fingers crossed, mate. See how we go.
Yeah, so let's jump into it. I'm going to go straight to you. Tell me, have you had any personal experiences about overcoming fear and subsequently taking action? And if so, what are they?
Yeah, and I think, mate, I could probably go on all day with this because it depends which context you're looking at. But personally, I kind of live my personal life on the edge to a point, and it's a little bit different now with toddlers and so forth. But one of the things I was thinking about when you asked, when Glenn flagged this as a topic, was bungee jumping the first time. And one of the crazy things about bungee jumping, I think, compared to something like skydiving, is you've got the ground right there.
Totally.
And there's nothing around you at all except around your ankles, and you don't realize that when you're jumping off.
Wow.
And so that snap second of... So, I mean, from a fear perspective, I think when you're talking about overcoming it,
yeah,
sometimes you don't have a choice. You just have to leap. And I would say there's, you know, if you flip the context to something more about, you know, where you have a chance to make a decision, to no clients, no income,
yeah,
and a pretty solid mortgage. So we, I mean, our personal situation from that step was pretty hectic. I resigned. We took out a mortgage that was really stretching us at the time based on the income that we had. And then I resigned with the overconfidence of being able to build the business up very quickly. And so there was a whole lot of fear built into that.
Massive.
Over the course of the following couple of years, we then went through IVF and had two kids. Mm. So there was a whole lot of maternity leave. And so I think those types of things, I mean, might sound crazy to the listener potentially, but they're more considered.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some fear in there, but you've got to think through it and then...
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Because you're bungee jumping and you're skydiving, like that's maybe a physical fear where split moment, well, you've thought about wanting to do it one day and then it's a leap of faith once you're high up there. But you're right, there's that other perceived fear, I suppose, of leaving a job that you're not happy with or starting a family or leaving a relationship or like there's whole range of things depending on individuals. So we just wanted to break it down today and just talk about, I suppose, overcoming and examples of how we overcome them to then take action. For me, I think... the biggest one for me was definitely leaving employment to start my own business, right? Now, you touched upon it before for you as well, James, but I think that regular pay packet that comes in on a fortnightly basis is you take for granted, don't you? It's just in the bank account. Regardless of your performance levels, in a lot of cases, it's there, it's reliable, you know what's coming in, and therefore you can adjust to what's going out. But this whole business story is a complete opposite. You don't know, well, you've got a forecast of income. You don't know where your next client's coming from. You don't know how much marketing to do. You don't know what marketing's going to work. You don't know if you're actually good enough to survive in a business world that there's so many unknowns, isn't
it? Should you hire? Should you not?
Yeah, yeah. Where's my niche in that business or that industry, so to speak? So, yeah, look, absolutely not turning people off running your own business by any means, but I think that the key question, and I made some notes here, which is unusual, when I help people transition out of employment to business, every time, and I can honestly say every time I've done this with people, I get the comment, I should have done it sooner. Not, I regret doing it.
Right? Absolutely. Yep.
And we're living proof that that's the case.
For sure.
So I think if we're out there listening and we're thinking about doing something and we're hesitating and we've got this perceived fear, right? We've got to be having the mindset of it's going to work, it's going to be okay. We're going to be able to put food on the table if business ownership is the question. Because really what it comes down to is what's the alternative?
Yeah, and I think from a fear perspective, whether it's business or making money decisions, so to speak, investment decisions, buying your first property, buying, you know, those types of things, it's that idea of, firstly, I think you've got to put the thing into context.
Yeah.
You've got to think about, well, why are you doing it in the first place, right? There's obviously the right reasons. If you're leaving employment, you're not happy there, or you've got the dream and you've got some ideas. Well, those are the motivators to get you through that, hopefully. Yeah. Most of the time, there'll be something on the other side that will get you there. I mean, for something like bungee jumping or canyoning or, you know, whatever that might be, it might be just getting over that hurdle and proving it to yourself or your mates.
Yeah.
But
because when you use that example, like nothing about its logic, right? It's just simply the adrenaline rush and the thrill that I get as a result of doing it, right? The downside isn't that flash.
No, the downside is not flash at all, mate.
The upside is I get this adrenaline rush and this thrill of doing this, and maybe I overcome a fear that I told myself I couldn't do it and now I can, sort of thing. So it's given me maybe more resilience. Yeah. I don't know. But, I take my hat off to you for doing that. But this fear acronym, right, I don't know if you've used it, but false evidence appearing real. So it's so true, isn't it?
Big time.
It's writing down on a piece of paper what's actually what are our roadblocks, what are our fears? Like what are the actual physical or mental attributes that are stopping us from taking action?
For sure. And writing it down, I think, is a good starting point, right? Starting to think through what is this? What's scaring me about it? Getting the context and gathering the info, I would think. So whatever the decision might be, I mean, if you use a financial decision, if it's about trying to think about investing for the first time, and risk is always going to be a part of whatever you do, and that risk might be scary, right? It's driving fear. But when you talk about this idea of it being in your head probably more than anything else, you can get past that if you start to think through which part of that am I scared of?
Yeah.
I think.
That's right.
And maybe also going down the path of, you know, when you're talking about gathering info, talking it through.
Yeah.
Because once you put it out there, you might actually talk yourself into it.
Becomes a bit real, doesn't it, when you tell someone as well?
Yeah.
A little bit like a goal. Yeah.
It's probably important to think, you know, some fears are paralyzing, and there's, you know, this is not something that you and I can probably help everyone through. If you're suffering from some serious debilitating anxiety, for example, well, you need to seek the right help to get you through that. But you know, a lot of what you do and I do a bit of as well is with this, you know, the sessions we do with clients, is a whole lot of it, it's talking about life, it's talking about what are your concerns, what are you scared of, and then but the act of being able to be there as a sounding board, I think, helps. Right, so finding someone to maybe just throw it out in the world and see, are you really scared?
Yeah, yeah. And mentors are a real, I think, non-negotiable in a lot of ways, aren't they? Now, mentors in any part of your life. Like I went camping about a month ago with my eldest son, and he's 11, and what I did was illegal, but let's run with it. I wanted him to get a feeling of driving a car.
Yeah,
right. Nice. And we're in a paddock. There was no one within kilometres of us. It was nice, flat, green. Like, it was on private land, so technically it is legal. But he had a coach or a mentor there who had been there and done that before. I'd driven a car for 20-odd years or longer. If he was to do that on his own, no way. There's too many roadblocks. I don't know what I'm doing. And that's a really small example, but there was a whole heap of fear coming into his situation that he couldn't overcome without that mentor or guide to get him through that. So I broke it down to work, relationship, and wealth creation, right? Now, there's many more subcategories within that, but I thought the three most common, I suppose, areas where we might have a fear around is in the area of our work or our vocation, which my millennial career do an excellent job at thrashing out. Relationships, good, bad, or otherwise. Do we stay in it? Do we commit and get down on one knee, like we've both done, which Glenn hasn't done yet, by the way.
No, we're still waiting.
Still waiting for that.
Yeah.
And then the area of wealth creation, which both of us talk about or profess to know something about. So whether that's taking the plunge to buy a property, whether it's investing in shares, whether it's going into a growth fund as opposed to a conservative one, et cetera, et cetera. So do you want to go through those in detail about those, how someone might overcome and then take action in those three categories?
Yeah, for sure. So, so where do we start?
Let's start with work, because you and I have both said we were working, we weren't quite content with what we were doing. We both said, well, we can't see ourselves doing that for the next 30 years. What's the alternative? So our alternative was we want to start our own business.
For
we think we've maybe got what it takes. We think we're passionate about that particular area. Let's give it a go, but we've had no experience, right?
I think the end result is you never ever ready.
No.
And that's the thing you have to be prepared for. You're not going to get one day and you know what, I'm fully prepared. I know all the answers. I know exactly where this is going to go and I think I'm ready for it. So you're always leaping at some point. There's a gap you're going to cross, which you're not quite sure about.
Yeah.
I think being aware of that as a starting point is the key. I mean, for us, I did have 3 months of notice and I knew they were going to kick me out straight away because I was managing a pretty big team at the time and they weren't going to want me there if I didn't want to be there, right? Yeah. So I was out and I had 3 months.
Yeah.
3 months of income.
Yeah.
And there was somewhat of a buffer.
Yes.
Looking back on that now, 3 months was certainly not enough.
In your mind though, it was.
Yeah.
And that's the key.
Yeah. 100%.
So it's your mindset and what you're comfortable with is the key to all this, isn't it?
Yeah. And to be honest, if you knew what you know after you do it, you may not do it anyway. So too much info is never a good thing.
And that's why I love working with young people is in a lot of ways, there's no prehistoric evidence that it's just, this is what I'm doing and I'll just go and do it.
For sure.
Right. That's great. Whereas I meet a lot of clients that are, no disrespect, 45, 50, whatever, they've had all this experience in life and some of them may not have worked out the way they wanted to. So as a result, no way I'm going back there to do that again.
And you create your own biases over time, right? So you're doing that from experience or from your upbringing, potentially what you've been taught from a very early age. And that's where, I mean, money, if you know, when we get to that part, that's where that part becomes very relevant is your early days and how you were taught.
Yeah.
But from a work perspective, I think you've got your experience to fall back on.
Mm.
You've got, you know, it might be a client base that you're already working with that some may follow you depending on what it is. You know, if it's not professional services or financial services or dealing or a service provider, if it's something completely different, well, you're doing it because, and you may not need to just completely leave, right?
Yeah.
So, there's lots of talk and you guys have covered this plenty with side hustles and that sort of thing. You can build this stuff up and test it and measure it as well.
Yeah. And that side hustle part reminds me of when I first took the plunge, right? I thought, similar to you, 3 months of buffers and I've got that covered. But I also went a little bit further in my thinking to the point of forward booked income, right? I built the side hustle to a point where, okay, if I walked away tomorrow, I knew that I had the 3 months, but I also had forward booked income. So in my mind, that was comfortable enough for me to go. And I knew that what I was doing as a business model was probably sustainable. I'd had enough runs on the board, I suppose. So it's really whatever makes you comfortable in your own mind, isn't it? And I'm actually dealing with one of my good mates, shout out to Spike. By the time he's made the decision, this probably won't have gone live. So you've already made the decision. Well done. But he's saying, I've got a high-paying job, but it's burning me out. It's 70 hours a week at the peak of the year, and it's great money, but it's burning me out, and it's not sustainable for my family for a whole range of reasons. He's been offered a job that's conservatively $1,500 a month less. Right now, that's not an easy decision, but it's 30, probably 20 hours at least less a week. So, and I just literally got off the phone and coming in here. I said, well, if you work out the per hour rate, you're actually on better money, even though you're taking a pay drop.
Big time.
Doing something that you're just as passionate about, no stress or not as much stress, but the perceived lower pay packet. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I think that's a really common one, is I'm stuck in a work environment where I'm not happy. Something's freaking me out. Either it's stress or it's too many hours, or I don't like my overstudy or boss or whoever. Do I suck it up because I'm on good income, or do I take the plunge into a better lifestyle? Because the grass isn't always greener, and sometimes we've got to suck it up and go through the hard times.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. And part of that fallback is understanding what could you cut out of your life that you're spending at the moment you probably don't need to.
Mm.
And if you get back to what are our absolute base expenses, one thing we started doing randomly is every like once a month we'd do what we were calling Povo Week.
Yeah.
And you would just eat like you had nothing. You wouldn't
baked
shop.
Beans.
You'd just dig out of the cupboard and find whatever you could, baked beans, rice, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And through a period of time where money was tight, that was incredibly helpful, right? And it also forces you a little bit to think through some of the decisions you might have been making previously and whether you actually needed to spend what you were spending to keep that lifestyle up.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really interesting one. It's almost you remember those hard times when you feel the successes. So you've got your business, in your example, to a level that you might be comfortable with or happy with. You've hit that target. You remember those times when you had Povo Week and you're on baked beans, right? It's almost the sweat in the journey as opposed to the victory itself.
Yeah, yeah, they're fond memories now, mate.
You haven't gone to Povo Week lately?
No, not so much, but I don't mind. I can live simply if needed, but
yeah. And you get to appreciate life too, don't you, when you're on the bare bones. So, yeah, cool. Relationships. Now, I'm no expert on this. I'm happily married with three kids. I'll give this one to you, actually.
Thanks. But I bet you've worked with plenty of people that have had their issues, right?
Correct.
And, yeah, I mean, maybe that's the thing. I mean, it always blew my mind when I was first learning to be a financial planner. I was working for a business where we would go out very early on in the stages of it and go and sit with the client and essentially collect their data.
Yes.
But you're pulling all this detail from them without really knowing them. And that was a great learning ground for me. But the end result from a relationship perspective is I remember the first person I ever went and saw, actually no, the first person kicked me out after about 10 minutes because he decided he didn't want a bar of it. These people were cold called, by the way.
Yeah.
Not by me. But the next couple, we were uncovering credit cards and things. And
the other one didn't know.
They didn't. Well, they probably knew, but it started a whole lot of conversation after I left, right? And so I didn't really know what I was doing, but we were just collecting the data and making sure, seeing if we could help, right?
Yeah.
And so they paid me at the end of that meeting to put a plan together.
Right.
And 6 months later, I still hadn't got any documents from them, so we couldn't build the plan that they paid for.
Yeah.
I got the call, finally, we're divorced.
Yeah.
And money, you know, as we all know, money can create these issues, right? So, I mean, fear in relationships, I think, is, you know, it's got to start with honesty, I would imagine.
Yeah.
And you've got to build trust.
Yeah.
And if that's not there, well.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that's a really strong point. And I do get the odd person or odd couple that come to me either through fear of having enough money for retirement, or maybe putting a band-aid effect by buying a property and the rest will look after itself, or doing something because it'll bind us together and it's we've both got an interest in it and that'll fix it. So you're right. I think there's got to be that honesty piece of it. And I think in respect to relationships, it's as I said, it's not my my focus or expertise, but in like with friends and family, again, similar to taking the plunge of if you're not happy in something, there needs to be some hard questions asked or some hard conversations had to either overcome it and stay or have a hard conversation and leave.
For sure. And again, yeah, I'm not, neither am I an expert at all, but some of the fear can come from money. Yeah. In a relationship, and if you are at the point where it's not sustainable and you're not going to continue with this person but you can't leave and you don't feel like you can. I had a conversation last week with a couple. They were both from previous, you know, really solid long-term relationships that had both fallen apart.
Yeah.
And now they're together and happy, but it's early days and there's that conversation of do we join the finances yet? And she was like, well, no, absolutely not, because I felt last time I couldn't leave the relationship because of it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there's a huge fear element to that is not – it's not, you're not making that up in your head, I don't think. I think there's, you know, there's some reality to that as well.
Totally,
But again, eventually, if you have the right buffers in place, you can overcome that type of thing, and I think that is very important.
Yeah, look, we could unpack that for the next hour or so, couldn't we? But yeah, that transparency and that honesty is got to be at the top of it. But yeah, so if we look back to fear, or what is my fear? Is my fear having that hard conversation with my partner? Is fear having that hard conversation with my boss? Is fear having that hard conversation with my child, or whatever it may be in our life? One thing that I've learned over time, and it still strikes me today, is it's never as good as it seems, never as bad as it seems. So that hard conversation, by the time you've had it, there's so much relief. And you always think, well, I do anyway, 99% of the time, it actually wasn't that bad. We've just built it up in our mind for it being so hard. And the longer we leave it, and I give this advice to my clients when I'm coaching them, is like when you're time chunking your day, get the hardest things out of the way early. Big and you'd time. Probably do the same, because the rest of the day then becomes a breeze. Same thing for sure. With hitting these fear items, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely right. And so, I mean, the hard conversations, if we're going to the money side of things and finances and wealth creation, is it's probably, I mean, you know, who knows where the fear is coming from, right? And it could be in your head, or it could be genuine, and that's driven by experiences and what you've been taught. You know, the idea that we've all heard those sayings when we're growing up, right? Money doesn't grow on trees.
Yeah.
There's movies that consider this stuff all the time. Yeah. Tell him he's dreaming.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a money aspect to everything, right?
Bad connotation around money, isn't it, a lot of the time? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and we're often told a bad story about money growing up. It's like, oh, money's tight, or as I said, doesn't grow on trees. You can't just go and get what you want, or don't be greedy. Like, there's all these little things that all continue to build as we go, and by the time we get to adulthood, a lot of the time it's like, well, we don't talk about money because we were taught things that didn't really allow us to freely discuss it.
Yeah, and you've been clouded by this whole scarcity mentality, right? And it's not your fault. You were young, it was there, it was a part of the conversation, it was how you brought up.
Yeah.
But the flip side of that, with thinking about how do you create the mentality around having more, having abundance, having sufficient, whatever you want to call that, is starting to take baby steps.
Yes.
And so when it comes to fear, just move a little bit.
Yeah.
Right? You don't have to be all of a sudden 2 investment properties and a whole bunch of shares
and
borrowed everything. And, you know, it's just about or dip your toe in the market.
Yeah.
Dip your toe in the water, whatever Absolutely. That might be.
Yeah, and if we went back even further, it might be just a conversation with someone who's got some positive connotations around money and investing in general. Like you might know someone up the road, or you might know someone's uncle or auntie who's done it. It might not be your parents, and probably good that it isn't in a lot of cases, but don't rush out and see a financial advisor or a property strategist if you've got this whole fear and it's so new to you. Just have a conversation with someone who's done it. And and then the end result might be to come and see James. But initially, it's just having these little conversations that are building positive foundations around your decisions.
And we're doing all these 15-minute calls, these initial phone calls with people, and that's their first step often. But even that is a scary thing, right? Yeah. You and I don't realize it. We don't think we're scary. But the idea of talking to someone about money, who might try and sell you something, or everyone's been told all the stories, and for good reason. There's
correct.
There are things you've got to be aware of and careful of.
Yeah.
I think it does, especially around the money side. I 100% agree with that. That you've got to. You've got to gather the info from the right people, from the trusted sources, but you've also got to be able to make your own decisions.
Yes.
And, I mean, there's value in the coaching, right? And that's, I mean, I don't want to do myself out of a job, but I'm not making your decisions for you.
No.
Right? We're guiding and we're giving you the tools, but it's, don't make us God. It'd be like the doctor, right? You can't, if you make the doctor... If you put the doctor right up at that level, you're going to have all sorts of problems.
Yes.
When it comes to health, right? Yeah. You've got to look after yourself at home. You've got to eat well. You've got to do whatever that might be.
Yeah, it can't be a Band-Aid, can it?
Bring in the professional, but not for everything.
No.
Right? We can't make all your decisions for you in that sense.
Yeah, and without sacking both of us, I think you'd agree that we might enter someone's life for a period, 12 months, 2 years, whatever it may be, but ideally we should also leave it. Because they're in a position where they can take control themselves.
100%.
I think we've both got models like that. Like, I think the ownership around it is by far the most important, and we're just facilitating that in every way, shape, or form.
Kind of like Netflix. Drop us if you don't need us.
That's right.
And that would be the aim, right? Mm. You're building confidence over time, and with clarity and confidence comes the ability to. It can be dangerous if you're trying to do something you're not sure about, and maybe that's when you tap back in again.
Correct. Yeah, that doesn't say we can't come back in, but it might just be that accountability factor as well. One thing I talk to clients about, and we're starting to round this up, but I ask them to list their three biggest fears of buying a property.
Yeah.
They come to me to say, well, I want to buy an investment property, but I haven't done it for 5 years. I know I could have, but I haven't done it because of X, Y, Z. Mm. What are your top three fears and what's held you back?
Yeah, why did you do it?
So usually it is, what if I can't get a tenant? What if number two is probably, what if the tenant wrecks the joint? And number three, what if I can't hold the mortgage, as in it costs me too much after the rent?
Yeah.
Okay. Those three things are totally... not easy, but easy overcomeable to the point of view of logic, okay? We buffer in some vacancy. We have insurances in place. Yeah, a bit of short-term rigmarole to fix the place if someone wrecks it, but we've got insurance. And then the third one of understanding your yield and your cash flow when you go and buy the property to begin with. So before you've actually pulled the trigger, we know the running costs pretty much. Until someone can outline that from the outside looking in, it's all blurry, isn't it? It's all fear. But it's, again, false evidence appearing real. What's some things that you sort of talk about with your clients in respect to that?
Well, you're fearing what you don't know, right? And the financial world can be a minefield. When you break it down and if you take the time to step through it, most people get it,
right?
And it's not that complex.
No.
It seems that way until you step into it. And, I mean, I think from these fear conversations, one more thing to note is that so many people come in with these biases that they just say the words, I'm not a money person.
Yes.
Or I don't deal with the finances.
Yeah.
And that's cool. That's, you got to start somewhere, and you don't necessarily have to be a mathematician to get it.
No.
And so it's not about forcing anything down your throat, but it's about just going, all right, well, how about we start with all the things that you do know you want to do,
yeah,
and then work back from there. And then those conversations with money will become a lot easier because you're separating money from life.
Yeah.
Money becomes the facilitator in a way. And so if you're looking at that in the fear context, then no matter which journey you're on, you know, if it's about maybe, you know, borrowing some money to invest, for example, or dipping to, you know, you've got an emergency fund. So I'm working with some clients at the moment who've got $300,000 in their offset account. Mm. And they want to save up for the next home once they've had their first kid, but it's probably not 6 or 7 years away, so they've got a bit of time.
Yeah.
And so we're looking at the option to invest some of that.
Yeah, okay.
But it's not all of it.
No.
There's $300,000 available. We're looking at maybe 100.
Yeah.
And then even dripping that into the market over 12 months to see how that feels.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to be aware that that's a very general and very personal conversation with someone to get to that point. But the idea of taking one step at a time is very, very relevant.
Yeah, baby steps. And then realizing that, hang on a minute, it's actually not that bad. Yeah. I'm not checking the share market every day like I thought I would, and it hasn't gone my bank account or whatever.
And media will do that too, you're right.
Absolutely. And that's the thing we haven't touched upon. Again, we could go for hours on, I suppose, perceived risk, but also the people around us that put these risks or fears into our mind, like, unfortunately, parents, siblings, media, anyone who's had bad experiences or want to sell a product that's to the negative, it can actually stop us from moving forward, can't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So that's been real. Rounding things out, we've got to have some honesty and some transparency around what it is that we're feeling to get the fear outlined. We think we need to outline the pros and cons of that decision we're about to make. What's the worst that can happen? And more importantly, what's the alternative, isn't it? Mm. Right? If I stay in this job, am I going to be happy? Are things going to change? If I take that leap and start my own business, right, is that going to fix everything? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe I'm doing it just because I think I should be a business owner, right? So really outlining and getting maybe a third person input into that as well.
Big time. Yeah, do it for the right reasons, and also just make sure that, you know that where you are right now, you're looking to make a change, whether that's relationship, money, whatever it might be, you're not overly satisfied with it right now.
Yeah.
So something's, if you hide from it, nothing will change.
Yeah.
So you don't really have a choice.
No.
It's just about, we've covered it all, but I think take the steps in the right direction.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, it's been a pleasure. I hope we've made some sort of sense. Thank you, James Millard, for coming on. So if you want to reach out to James, financial advisor at Sufficient Funds, sufficientfunds.com.au, Glenn said he's a trusted panel. He's on the trusted panel of advisors. So that must mean he was important, but he is. He's a good guy and knows his stuff. So thanks again for coming on. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll talk to you soon.
We acknowledge the Darkin Young people, traditional custodians of the land on which our studio sits, and pay respect to their elders, past and present. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to our podcast.
My Millennial Money supports A21, a charity focused on abolishing slavery and human trafficking all over the world. Check out a21.org.au for more info. If you would like some other giving options, or if you're unsure about which charity you can support, head to thelifeyoucansave.org.au.
If you're looking for a super fund that puts its members' interests above all else, choose a super performer, Sun Super. With low fees, strong investment returns, and great member services, Sun Super is Super Ratings 2020 Fund of the Year and has also been awarded by Money Magazine, Canstar, and Finder. Find out more at sunsuper.com.au/M3. You can join Sun Super online in under 5 minutes. This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Symo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, is an authorised representative of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451-289.